Hi, I'm Emma Mannix-Jeeves, and you're listening to How's That, the cricket podcast. How's that? You
messed about, I called you up. How's that? Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of How's That, the cricket podcast with me, Lily.
And me, Ollie.
So we actually haven't got too much cricket to talk about this week, have we? There's been no WNCL since we last spoke. We've got a bit of Big Bash, and we've got an interview. But other than that, not much, is there?
For once, it's been pretty hectic. Been pretty hectic since I came back from Thailand, really, hasn't it? It's been all Big Bash. There's been WBBL that we've had as well. We've had, you know, all the Big Bash, all the men's Big Bash, and now we can finally get a little bit of a break. So it's quite nice to have a short little chat before a pretty decent interview as well.
Yeah, it is. So I guess to run through just where the Big Bash has been since we left off. Now, obviously, we mentioned last time that it was the two games were between the Brisbane Heat and the Hobart Hurricanes and the Sydney Thunder and the Melbourne Stars. Sydney Thunder needing to win to progress to finals, and Hurricanes needed to win and needed Thunder to lose to make it through as well. So do you want to talk us through what happened and talk us through up until where we are at the moment?
So, yeah, pretty much, you know, anyone playing against the Stars basically this year was pretty much going to win, right? That was the assumption. So the ball was in Thunder's court, and that is me saying that as a Stars fan. Apologies to any of the Stars fans listening as well, but that's how the season has gone so far. Well, for us, or not even so far, because it's done for us now because we are bottom of the table. Anyway, Hurricanes won somehow. Still don't know how they did that. Defended 120 against the Brisbane Heat. Yeah, that was an unreal game. Brisbane not able to trace it down. They had Jimmy Pearson, 39 off 37, but they were a bit lackluster, weren't quick enough, didn't get the runs. Hobart winning that game. But in the end, it was the Thunder who ended up winning. So Hobart missed out after all of that. Brisbane managed to sneak in to the top five. So good win, or not even a win, good result for them, I should say. We move into the finals. Brisbane then beating the Sydney Thunder. Sydney Thunder so unlucky that they got off to such a good start, but the rain stopped them in their tracks. So the Heat won by 8 runs on the DLS. Some batting innings, though, from the Brisbane Heat. Of course, former Thunder player Usman Khawaja with a really nice 94 that set them on their way. But they couldn't quite get the job done, the Sydney Thunder, in reply. They were 52 for 1 when the game was paused. David Warner was off to an absolute flyer, 36 off 20, but couldn't quite get his team over the line in that one. Then we had, you know, probably the preview to the likely final, Perth against the Sydney Sixers, Perth winning that one by 7 wickets. And then, of course, we had the Brisbane Heat beating the Melbourne Renegades by 7 wickets with 7 balls remaining. Of course, they were in a really good position and they managed to hold on and get over the line. So, of course, that means we've got Sydney Sixers against Brisbane, and the winner of that will play against Perth on the 4th of February. So that's pretty much the Big Bash for you.
I think my final prediction, I think it's going to be a Scorchers win. I think it's going to be a Sixers Scorchers final and a Scorchers win. I think they're going to go back to back with their win last year. What do you think about that?
Well, it's going to be Scorchers Sixers, isn't it? We've known that pretty much since the start of the tournament. I'm just thinking how heartbreaking it would be for Sixers fans if they lost both the WBBL and the BBL title. Obviously, we talked about the Adelaide Strikers maybe going WBBL and BBL double. That hasn't happened. But there could be a double defeat for Sixers in final. It would be horrible. Just to be different, I'm going to say the Sixers are going to win.
Okay. Just to be so different. We've got one. Okay, one of each. Yep. All right. Well, we'll reconvene and we'll see what happens then. Just to briefly talk about the Under-19s World Cup, I guess we haven't spoken about it at all. It was a, I guess, maybe a little bit of a surprising result. It was the grand final between England and India. And India obviously won the final there. The semi-final was the one that surprised me the most between Australia and England. England only set 99. They were all out for 99 and Australia couldn't even manage to chase that down. I think they were all out for 96. And I'm just like, that does not look like Australia. It doesn't look like Australia with getting all out for under 100. But obviously that progressed England to the final. And yeah, it was disappointing, I guess, from a England fan perspective, wasn't it? I don't know how closely you followed in that game, but it was just like they kind of pulled it together at the end in the semi-final and managed to get it to a little bit of a defendable score, but they just couldn't do that in the grand final. In the grand final, England were all out for 68 in 17 overs, and it only took India 14 overs to chase down that score, which, yeah, it was just a bit disappointing, wasn't it, to be completely honest?
Yeah, I think what ended up happening, obviously Australia, you know, they teach the junior teams in any sport to play like the senior team, right? Well, Australia didn't play like the senior Australia side because, for one, they lost, which we know Australia at senior level don't do. If you save that super over loss against India a little while back. But it was just crazy, wasn't it? If we just go back there, that England managed to win that game. And then obviously in the final, you know, you can't put 68 up on the board in the final and expect to win, can you? They were always going to lose that game when they put that up on the board. And India, easiest win of those players' lives, probably, chasing that one down. But a good tournament overall for England. Obviously, it was nice to see some of our former guests as well do well in the tournament. You know, we had a few there. We had Ella Haywood, we had Reece McKenna, we had Amy Smith, we had Sophia Smale. Am I missing anybody? I don't think so.
Don't think so.
But it was nice to obviously, you know, see them do well and represent their respective countries. So, you know, good tournament for them. Decent tournament for us as well, having four guests there. Like, that's pretty surreal to say. But in the end, India deserved winners.
Yeah, they were. Like you can't really take it away from them. Obviously, being able to bowl out a team like in England for 68, it's not, is it more so bad batting from England, or was it just really good bowling from India? Like, you know, it could be either. I think you could go either way. But yeah, I guess, like you said, good game for India overall, and yeah, deserving winners of that game. Someone that I want to mention, obviously, is South Australian, Maggie Clark. Now, she's 15, I found out the other day. 15 years old. She was the lead wicket taker of the entire tournament. And she's bowling absolutely rapid and taking the most wickets out of everybody in this under-19s tournament. 15. How mental is that?
In all seriousness, it's a great effort, isn't it? Obviously, you see most 15-year-olds now going back to school, and she's tearing apart the world's, you know, they're the best youngsters in the world, aren't they? Obviously, it's a World Cup. It's going to be the best players at that age. And she's just taking it up to them like it's nothing. Like, no one's doing that other than her. So fair play to her. I'm sure she's going to have a long career in the green and gold as long as she keeps it up. And if she reaches her potential, then goodness me, Australia are going to have some team. They always do. I've said this for years. Australia, in the women's game, men's game, whatever it is, they just find cricketers. They just, the production line never stops. They've got another gem here, I think.
They've got such a just a big pool, haven't they? Just such a big selection pool. And it's like when someone goes down, they've got such a good replacement. So, yeah, it will be interesting to see what the senior team looks like in a few years down the line, and see if we see some of these names making it up into that, yeah, that main Australian team. So the other night, the Australian Cricket Awards happened, and we thought it'd be worthwhile to just go through some of the award recipients that received their brilliant cricket awards due to their amazing summers. So we'll start with the women's group. Beth Mooney won the Women's ODI Player of the Year award. Talia McGrath won the Women's T20 International Player of the Year. Ashley Gardner won WBBL 08 Player of the Tournament. Annabelle Sutherland won the Women's Domestic Player of the Year, and Courtney Sipple won the Betty Wilson Young Cricketer of the Year award. Then to go on to the men, Usman Khawaja won the Shane Warne Men's Test Player of the Year award. David Warner won the Men's ODI Player of the Year. Marcus Stoinis was Men's T20 Player of the Year. Michael Nisa was Men's Domestic Player of the Year, and Matt Short was the Big Bash 12 Player of the Tournament. And Lance Morris was the Bradman Young Cricketer of the Year. Beth Mooney won the Belinda Clark Award, and Steve Smith won the Alan Border Medal, and Usman Khawaja won the Community Impact Award. No surprises there, really, is there? Obviously, outstanding cricketers that we've seen all summer round, and yeah, have just played brilliantly for their Big Bash team and for their country as well.
Yeah, certainly. Obviously, first of all, I think the opening toast we've got to give is to Matt Short. I messaged you after he received the BBL 12 Player of the Year, and I just said it was an absolute masterstroke getting him on the podcast, because he's had the most unreal summer in the Big Bash, and he definitely deserved it. Yeah, I don't think you can complain with any of those award winners, really. From the men's side, Usman Khawaja had a wonderful year. Steve Smith, across most formats, was a little bit shaky in the T20 World Cup, but outside of that, he's had a wonderful year. And in the women's game, you know, you can't really begrudge the likes of Beth Mooney, Tali McGrath, Courtney Sipple is another one we can talk about on that conveyor belt alongside Maggie Clark. So yeah, you can't really begrudge any of those award winners. They're all deserving in their own right.
Yeah, absolutely. And like we said, it's been a pleasure to watch every single one of them over the course of the summer. It's quite disappointing now that like the cricket's just already wrapping up. Hasn't it gone so quick this summer of cricket already?
Yeah, it's been mental. Obviously, like right at the start of the summer, we had the WBBL and we're just thinking, oh my word, like this is all in front of us. We've got test matches, we've got ODIs, we've got the Big Bash. It's going to be amazing. You get to February and it's like, oh, it's all over already.
It's done.
But I mean, in fairness, we've got the English summer coming up pretty quickly. We've got an Ashes, men's and women's Ashes series. We've got the 100. We've got the Vitality Blast. We've got loads of cricket coming up in the English summer. So, and we're not without cricket for too long. We've got in about a week, we've got the India-Australia men's series as well coming up. So cricket never really stops.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. It just relocates. So we'll try our best to obviously keep everybody updated with what's going on there. Try and update everyone and we'll do our best. But yeah, that just about wraps it up for the cricket this week. Now moving on to our interview. This week we spoke to Emma Mannix-Jeeves, who is probably one of the most impressive young players in Australian women's cricket, I'd say, at this point in time. She had an absolutely outstanding WNCL tournament last year, winning the WNCL for the Tasmanian Tigers, scoring 100 alongside Elise Villani to bring up the first title for the Tasmanian Tigers. But what did you make of the interview, Ollie?
Yeah, it was good. And obviously, as we teased last week, we've got the other Centurion in that final coming up in Elise Villani. So it's a bit of a double header. But yeah, it was great to speak to Emma about how obviously she lost her contract, got it back, the mindset she's had around that, her work ethic, and sort of how everything's happened with her within her cricket. It's worth saying as well that this was recorded quite a while ago. It was recorded during the men's Big Bash First Nations round. And of course, she is a First Nations woman and is Emma Mannix-Jeeves. So we had a bit of a chat about that as well. So it was a wonderful interview, really.
Yeah, so enjoy our interview with Emma Mannix-Jeeves.
And she knocks it in front of square leg. And there's a century for the hometown girl. 100 not out. Well batted. Emma Mannix-Jeeves.
Welcome and thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Do you mind just telling us where in the world you are at the moment and what teams you're associated with at this point in time?
I'm in little old Tasmania in Australia, currently at Blunston Arena, actually, while doing this podcast. So pretty lucky to be able to just come here and basically call it home, I guess. And yeah, I play for the Hobart Hurricanes and the Tasmanian Tigers.
Perfect. So obviously you're in WNCL at the moment. How's that all been for you? How's the season gone so far? Obviously you're doing quite well, so personally and as a team. So yeah, how have you found it this season?
Yeah, it's been great. We kind of had a little kick up against Victoria early, but I think we needed that coming off our season last year, which was just so incredible. I think we had something like 8 wins in a row. So I think it was, you know, not ideal, but it was good for us to start off with a loss and kind of make us kick into gear a little bit. And since then, we've played some really good cricket, and we're really happy with the cricket that we're playing and where our team is at. We've had a couple of injuries, but we know that, I guess, we have the depth in our squad to be able to cover those. And yeah, we're really pumped, and there's a really great feel around the group, and we're just looking forward to playing more cricket.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Like you said, it's been really good for Tasmania, and I think a lot of teams as well. I think it's going to be an extremely even competition, and it's going to be super interesting going into, you know, finals to see who comes out on top. And obviously you're the reigning champions of the WNCL Tasmania. Does it make you a bit more nervous or a bit more confident that, you know, you've had a win last year and you're trying to go back to back?
I think personally it's just like a bit of another drive for me. I guess my thoughts are I'm chasing that feeling again that we had last year in the final. So that's me personally. I think a lot of the girls are similar, and we've gotten to a great stage where we're using that as motivation to go back to back. It's not, yeah, we're not kind of shying away, you know, because we are the reigning champs. We're trying to use it as motivation and feel that feeling again for each other and for this team and our organization that we all love. So yeah, I think it's only a good thing for us, and hopefully, fingers crossed, and we can play some good cricket and do it, go back to back.
That's wonderful to hear, and it's good that you're obviously using that as a in a positive way. But I guess we'll talk a bit more about WNCL later on. But to kind of go right back to the very beginning, how did you first get into cricket?
I'm sure, like many people, backyard cricket, beach cricket. My dad, he's a cricket nuffy. He loves the game, so we always went and watched him on a Sunday, and it was kind of like a bit of a family affair at his cricket club. My uncle and dad played together, and my nan was in the canteen, and yeah, my older brother and myself and my younger brother, we were always just in the nets, hitting balls or mucking around or something like that. So yeah, it was always inevitable that I was going to get into cricket. I grew up in the cricket bubble, so yeah, basically my dad and my older brother were the ones that got me into it.
And from there, obviously, then you obviously went on to play professional cricket and are doing so, you know, great, you know, doing great things now. What was your pathway from sort of backyard beach cricket, you know, in childhood to playing professional cricket for Tassie and the Canes now?
Yeah, I guess for me, I'm quite lucky. I think I kind of came through the pathway at a great time. I think I only played 1 year of boys cricket when there wasn't female teams or like kind of a women's team in my hometown. So I didn't mind playing boys cricket. I mean, I've got two brothers, so it was kind of natural for me to be playing with the boys. But yeah, so I guess I played one year of boys cricket, and then I got into playing with the my local female team, and that was really great. And then from there, I kind of got recognised by a few people. I think that was because of my older brother was in some state pathways at the time. So, yeah, for me, my pathway was kind of under 15 state and then under 18 state. And I probably had 7 years in those all up. I think I started when I was, or maybe 6 years. I started when I was 12. And yeah, it took me to when I was 18. I got my first contract while I was in my last year of school, and that was kind of my pathway into my first lot of professional cricket, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And just to go a little bit more into your background, you grew up and you still are a proud Palawa woman, part of the, you know, obviously a First Nations woman. How proud are you of your background, and how proud are you of the, you know, the opportunities you can get to showcase that and teach people about that culture?
Yeah, I'm really proud. It's not something that I've always, I guess, known about, really. It was always there, but I just was, you know, I was young and naive and not, I guess, curious to ask anything about it. So it kind of took me getting to go away to a national Indigenous championships in Alice Springs to kind of become a little bit more curious about my background and the whole culture in itself. And it is so fascinating. And I've really loved the last 5 years of just learning and wanting to know more about it. So I'm really fortunate that, you know, I have a tiny little bit of a platform that, you know, I can hopefully inspire some young boys and girls to get out and play cricket and give back to the sport that's given me so much. And I'm really proud that I can do that in a Indigenous space as well as you know, just my community in general.
That's amazing. That's absolutely wonderful. Now, I think this episode will go out after the men's Big Bash round finishes, but we are currently speaking during the men's Big Bash First Nations round. And of course, the WBBL has theirs as well. You've got the Faith Thomas Trophy over in Adelaide. It's a worldwide competition. Obviously, you get, you know, players coming from far and wide coming to play in both competitions. You know, how proud are you to be able to be, you know, a leader, you know, being able to showcase and teach others and even yourself about First Nations culture?
Yeah, I'm really proud. Like, I know that I was lucky enough to actually play in our First Nations round, which was only like one of the few games that I played for the season. So I was very, very happy to play that one. But yeah, just like our overseas, they obviously don't know a whole lot about it. But it was great that, you know, they were curious. They were asking me questions. And you know, I'm not, I don't pretend to know everything. Like, a few questions that they asked me, I was kind of like, oh, I don't know, but I'll find out. So just like that type of stuff, like, it, people are just talking about it and people are just interested. And it just starts a conversation. And they even taught me a few things at the time. So I think it's a really great initiative. And I think Cricket Australia do it better than a lot of sports at the minute. And they're still trying to get better with everything they do around it. So I just think, yeah, they're on the right path, and it's great to be able to use a platform that we all have to start a conversation and bring up issues that are in the community.
You've also represented Victoria and Australia in you know, the First Nations teams, including a tour overseas to England to commemorate the 1868 touring team. Are these some of the, you know, the proudest moments that you've had so far in your career? I know to pull on the Australia jersey in any way must be pretty amazing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. That was an incredible tour, and I'll never forget that. And I'm very grateful that I could be a part of it. I was only kind of fresh to everything at that stage. So I was very lucky to be able to go and do that. And if I could go back, I would in a heartbeat. And yeah, it was Tassie don't have a team in the what was in Paja Cup, now NICC. But I very much enjoyed my time playing for Victoria in those carnivals. Had some awesome people around me, and at that stage I was kind of like, oh, I don't really know much about my heritage and my background or Aboriginal culture in general, and I was kind of felt a bit out of place. But they all made me feel very, very welcome, and it was kind of, I got the vibe very quickly that it didn't matter where you came from, you know, how Aboriginal you looked or anything like that, you were welcome and you were celebrated. And yeah, it's almost like the cricket is second at those things. It's all about the culture and embracing one another. And they're some of my fondest memories. And I reckon the Impaja Cup is my favorite cricket tournament. Like, just seeing some young girls go and get their first wicket, and the excitement that they have, like, it just kind of makes you feel warm inside, and you remember, you know, the reason that you started playing. And yeah, you know, you kind of realize that it's cricket is just a game at the end of the day, and there's much bigger things around it.
Yeah, certainly. And just to take a step back, I mean, obviously, you know, we talked about that tour before to England. You were, you know, 17, 18 at the time of that tour. You got your first professional contract at, you know, during school in year 12. How nice it's been, you know, to sort of have that rapid rise right at the start, you know, where you sort of, you know, you're doing all these things at such a young age that some, you know, dream to do in their career.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was awesome. Something I never expected to do. And I think I probably didn't realise the how big of a deal it was at the time. But I look back now and I'm like, oh, I wish I had have taken it in more. I wish I had have embraced it more and really treasured the moments that we had. But yeah, like, I know that some people that I've played with have never had the opportunity to travel and play or play for their country, whichever way it might be. So I'm very lucky, and I'm very thankful for that opportunity. And I hope that, you know, one day I might get it again, and really, you know, take it in this time and be thankful for it.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I mean, your best cricket's surely ahead of you, so hopefully we can see you get that chance again. But you received your first professional contract during year 12, which is, you know, a busy year for any, you know, average student, never mind someone who's trying to balance cricket alongside of that as well. But, you know, was it tough to balance cricket with school, or did you, you know, have a, you know, sort of a stronger balance between one or the other, or did you try and, you know, have it 50-50, or what was the go there?
I'd love to say that I put school first, but probably didn't. I was very lucky that they let me, because I grew up in Launceston, and to play cricket you had to be in Hobart. So I was very lucky that they let me finish my year in Launceston, and just travel down in my holidays and every chance I got to be with the team. But I think looking back, like the school that I went to, or the college that I went to, I could leave if I didn't have class. And it was very kind of self-driven. So I found that, you know, in my breaks I would go and I'd have a cricket session. And then I could come back, I'd get my schoolwork done. I got very well acquainted with the library to get my homework done. And then after school, I would go to club training and I would go to the gym and get all my extra stuff in. So I think I had a balance that worked for me. I probably didn't have a social life, but at the time I just head down, bum up, and I got it done. So that was kind of me for year 12.
I think everyone who wants to succeed in life has got to sacrifice something. And obviously it's what's about not really having a social life. And, you know, that's not, you know, not many people have to sort of go through that at that age. And that's sort of age where you should be, you know, going out and doing whatever. So do you think these sacrifices have, you know, made you into the person that you are, and you know, better off for these sacrifices?
Oh, absolutely. And I think at the time I didn't love making those sacrifices, but now I look back and I make them now, and I'm like, if that's what I have to do to play the game that I love and be in the position that I am, then that's the sacrifice I make. And it's you don't make it all the time, you know, you get to still have a bit of a social life now, and they're really big on trying to get you to have things outside of cricket. But yeah, at the time I was fully focused on trying to pass school and give cricket my best shot. So yeah, it wasn't something that I really worried about in the moment.
Yeah, no, that completely makes sense. And now you've kind of probably got the best of both worlds. You know, you're traveling, you're playing cricket for your state, and you know, you're making so many friends along the way, I'm sure. So that must be quite a good position to be in.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I guess I was, you know, when you're the new kid, you kind of want to make your mark and, you know, try and impress your peers. And I guess I'm at the stage now where I've found a balance between working hard and also, you know, going out and living life and I guess enjoying the company of the people around you. Half the time it is with your teammates. In a bit of a cricket bubble at times, but I love my teammates, and the people around me are like family. So yeah, it's not hard to I guess sacrifice a few things when you get to do that.
No, for sure. And then moving on, I guess, to probably one of the lower points in your career so far. Now, in 2020, you lost your contract with Tasmania, which obviously you've gained back since then. So how did you go about getting that contract back? And if you can kind of take us into your mindset when you did lose it, you know, what was going through your mind at that time?
Yeah, that's definitely probably one of the lower points in the last couple of years. It's not something that I saw coming, but looking back now, I'm like, yeah, like it needed to happen. I needed to, you know, learn a tough lesson. I guess I got a bit comfortable in my second year on my contract. And I didn't know what hard work was, and I wanted that social life. like the people around me were having, but I didn't see the hard work that they also put in. So I look back now and I've said since I got back that I'm grateful to Sally Ann, my coach at the time, for having that hard conversation and doing probably the harder option and making me really work and realize that this is what I want, and I'm a better person, a better cricketer, and a harder worker because of it. So I guess I lost my contract. I had to move home and move back in with my family, which was nice at the time, but it's a bit of a kick in, you know, kick to the ego, moving back in with the family. But I guess I just tried to surround myself with good people, people that believed in me, because at the time I was mad. I was, you know, feeling all the emotions, and I was kind of like in the mindset of, right, well, I'm going to prove you wrong. You know, I am good enough to be there, and I'm going to prove you wrong. And, you know, some might say that that's not necessarily the best form of motivation, but in the moment, that's what kind of, you know, got me out of bed to go to work and make a living, and then to, after working 9 till 5, to go to the gym, or to get up and go to the freezing cold indoor nets in the middle of winter and have a 6 a.m. hit and then go to work. So that was, I guess, my drive in the initial couple of months. And I was lucky enough that I could go back and work with Tim Coyle, who has been a coach, assistant coach of Australia, the Australian women's team. I'm very thankful for that connection there. So worked with him multiple days a week and just, went back to basics. And then club cricket started, and I just went out there and I enjoyed the game and just found the love again, I guess, and ended up making it back into the Tassie squad for that next season. So that's kind of, where that year started.
Yeah, so the time frame, I guess, between losing it and then coming back, you know, when was it that you were like, right, like you said, I want to prove them wrong, I want to get back to it? How long had you had between losing it and then really driving to get back in that spot you were in before?
I probably had 2 or 3 days sitting in my bed feeling quite sorry for myself, and people trying to contact me and, I guess, comfort me. But there was a few people initially that were like, not outraged, but I rang my manager straight away and I was like, this is crap. Like, what's happening? Like, my career's gone. And initially he was like, nah, like, you'll get it back. It'll work out. And it probably took me, I guess, the couple of weeks in the lead up to moving home to feel all the feels and, hate everything that was going on and just want to lie in bed all day. But then after that, I kind of met up with a few people and put some plans in place. And I think it took having a hit with Tim to kind of be like, nah, it's okay, like, I'll get it back. And my mindset kind of shifted, and I was focused on getting back to where I was and being even better than where I was. So I did also, I forgot, the time that I moved home was when COVID hit. So we were kind of in lockdown for a month and a half, and I just had surgery on my knee. So that also kind of put me on the back burner. But once I was back and able to do some kind of cricket, whether it was just standing there hitting balls, that's kind of when my mindset shifted, and it was all kind of about proving people wrong and getting back to where I wanted to be.
Yeah, and I guess, like, you know, having it in the back of your mind that you have lost a contract before, and, you know, it being possible that you can lose something like that, does that, I guess, drive you to not be put in that position again? And if so, how do you go about that to be like, right, I can't go through that again?
Yeah, absolutely. I never want to feel that way. And I think as well, I never want the young girls coming through to feel that way either. So, like, I see some things in them that I didn't see myself at the time, but I'm like, no, stop doing that. Like, let's work hard and like, come on, let's go and do this. Or I think I, like, as I said earlier, I didn't know what hard work was and I didn't want to put it in. So, those hard running sessions. I love the gym. I've never had an issue with kind of pushing myself in the gym, but pushing myself in a running session is something that I've had to learn to not love, because I don't think I'm ever going to love it, but just learn to get through and get the best out of myself. And I guess those feelings that I thought, or feelings that I felt, kind of pop into my head when I'm doing them, and it's like, no, like, you're getting this done, like, you're working hard and we're getting through it, because the other option is I'm not going back there. Yeah. And even like at the time, I didn't like the roller coaster of being a professional cricketer. I didn't like having bad net sessions, or I guess failing. And now I kind of look at it as an opportunity to learn and to grow, which I don't think I did initially. And I think I'm in a better mindset and space because I do that now, and I can learn to appreciate the roller coaster that the cricket life is.
And you talked a little bit before about the younger players, you're trying to steer them on the right path because you've been in the position where you're like, you know, I've lost the contract. Is it one of those things where you sort of become more of a leader now that you've been through that, to say to these younger cricketers, like, I want to help you through, I want to make sure that you're doing all the right things and putting you on the right path? Do you feel more of a leader and more experienced having gone through what you went through?
I think so, yeah. I think I'm one of those people that, you know, I don't need a title to lead, and I don't necessarily at times want one. So in my club team, I think that I am a leader, but I'm not the captain. But I'm still going to try and lead from the front and show the younger just club girls, you know, where they can go, and I guess hopefully the right way to go about it. But yeah, I guess I think I can empathize with, you know, young girls if they do lose their contract like I did, or, you know, if they're here, they're in their last year of their contract and they're kind of, you know, really anxious or worried about, you know, that contracting period, because it is a really crappy time of the year, and it does put a lot of kind of stress and anxiety around everything you do, because, you know, it's our income, it's our job at the end of the day as well. So I think hopefully the younger girls feel like, one, they know about my history, but also that they can kind of come to me and I guess just chat to me and learn from my mistakes and get some, I guess, comfort out of seeing what I've been able to turn a probably the lowest point of my career into. I think I'm at a really good point and playing probably some of my best cricket at the minute. So I hope that they get something out of that.
Yeah, it's a wonderful mindset to have, and it's clearly working. Perhaps best seen in the final last year of the WNCL against South Australia, winning the whole thing. You spoke about the 8-game winning streak before. This was the cherry on the cake in amongst all that. You make 100, you win the game, you get to lift the trophy. Was that the moment where, you know, you've come off the lowest low? Was that the point where you're like, right, I'm well and truly back now?
Yeah, I get goosebumps. Like, I've got a tear in my eye when you say that. yeah, I thought that kind of getting my contract back would have been kind of like the moment. But I think I was the pregnancy replacement player last year. So I wasn't even kind of like on a full contract, I guess. Yeah, so for me, that was just like a fairy tale. I couldn't have kind of scripted it any better. That was definitely the moment. I didn't know what the moment was going to be, but I'm so just pleased that was it, and to do it in Tassie with my family sitting up up behind me watching and being the first ever Tasmanian team to do it. Yeah, it was just incredible. I think at one stage I was contemplating leaving the state to try and make it in a different state, but I'm so glad that I stayed. And I said it in an interview afterwards, I believe that everything happens for a reason, and if that was the reason that, you know, everything in the past couple of years happened, then I'd do it all again to have that feeling.
Yeah, and it's one of those, I suppose, where, you know, it's a big moment, obviously, for Tasmanian cricket. Obviously, you spoke about, you know, being the first Tasmanian team to do something like that. You know, you didn't have to leave your home state to achieve greatness. What was that sort of like, being a part of such a historic moment in not only the state's cricket, but the state as a whole?
Oh, just, like, unforgettable. I'll never, ever forget that. I would have been completely devastated if I had to leave Tassie and play for a different state. So yeah, to be out there, and I couldn't have dreamed anything like what happened, to put on a, I don't even know, 200 plus partnership with Elise Villani, someone that I grew up watching on TV play for Australia. Like, she's just an incredible human to start off with, and an incredible cricketer. And to bat nearly half the game with her, and to finish it off out in the middle. Yeah, I'll never forget that feeling, and running in and embracing everyone at the end. It's very special for me, and I know that it was very special for the whole organisation of Cricket Tas, because it is just one big family here. And, you know, I'm often go upstairs, and I know everyone's names upstairs behind the scenes, and they're always asking about how we're going. And so it wasn't just for me, it wasn't just for the team, it was for this whole organization that works hard behind the scenes.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. And like you said, it's been amazing for Tasmanian cricket since you won. I guess Tasmania itself is probably one of the states, and maybe like ACT as well, where, you know, you're not Victoria and New South Wales, you know, big names, big states. And I guess that win has really kind of put you on the board as one of the top teams and the team to beat, because, you know, you've won it. So that must be pretty reassuring, knowing that, you know, building Cricket Tasmania up is it's at a good spot now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Sally Ann Beams should get so much credit for that, and Dan Marsh. They came in 5 years ago, and they had a vision. I don't know if the final was what they envisioned. I think it was probably better, but I know that Sal got a lot of scrutiny at first for not having enough Tasmanians in the team, but she, you know, she recognised that we just didn't have that depth behind us, and we had to create that. And I think we've made great steps in creating the pathways underneath, and we've got some incredible talent coming through that I have no doubt will play hopefully alongside me one day. So yeah, we did have to build a team off, you know, some mainland players, but people that come down here, they just love the environment, they love the state, and they, like, they're adopted Tasmanians. And at the end of the day, it is a business, and we want to win. Hopefully we can get more Tasmanians into the team in the future. But yeah, I think Sal should be very much commended on sticking firm to her vision. And yeah, she just created a team that knew how to win. We didn't know how to win 5 years ago, but now, even if we're not playing good cricket, we still know how to win, and we try and do it at any cost.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Not any cost. That sounds a bit bad, but like...
Within reason. You know what I mean? Within reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, amazing. And yeah, brilliant to hear. But for you, now we've obviously spoken to many of your teammates who played in that final as well, but didn't bat. So, you know, spring to a couple, and they were fine with it. You know, they did their job with the ball, and then they could just sit back and watch the batting masterclass going on in front of them. So for you, you know, out there, obviously made 100, what on earth was going through your mind? How did you bat so well in such a intense situation?
It's It's funny, a lot of it I don't even remember. I was just so in the moment. But people talk about being in that zone, and you only kind of get into it like very rarely. But it's true. Like it was just me and Junior, but Elise Villani out there in the middle, and it was me and her against 11 other players in red. And I think she definitely reined me in and calmed me down many times throughout that innings. And she's just such a calm head and presence, and been there many, well, actually not been there many times before. It was the first final she's ever won. But yeah, we were just feeding off each other and just like loving the moment. I think I had some innings last season in the lead up to the final that I wasn't necessarily happy with. And I guess, you know, the thoughts creep into your mind when you're out in the middle of what the people around you are thinking. And, you know, you're not good enough to be here. Like, I'm too slow. You know, I can't hit the ball like she does or anything like that. And any of those kind of thoughts that popped in my head, Junior kind of just brought me back to the present moment. And yeah, like I don't really remember getting my 100. I don't remember looking up to my parents and seeing what they were. I've seen some videos of them bawling their eyes out, but yeah, I don't remember what my teammates were doing. It's all kind of just a blur, but I definitely remember the feeling at the end. And yeah, as I said earlier, like I'm definitely chasing that feeling because it was just incredible.
That's amazing. So amazing.
Obviously, if we go back a little bit earlier, you said you signed on as Tasmania as a replacement player. And obviously you've done, you know, brilliantly since then to make sure that, you know, next contract is certainly not going to be on a replacement sort of deal. But I was sort of going back to the keeping situation. It's sort of like one of those things where you're a little bit on the outer for now, and hopefully it doesn't stay that way, you know, for the rest of your career. But obviously you are a budding wicketkeeper. How do you stay ready for your time in the future when, obviously, you've got players like Lizelle Lee? It's very, very tough to move someone like Lizelle Lee out of away from the gloves. But how are you keeping yourself ready for your time in the future, which will certainly come? But how are you keeping yourself ready for that time when it does eventuate?
Yeah, I guess I am lucky enough that I am the 50-over keeper. Jude, our new coach, and Dan at the time initially put a lot of trust and faith into me, and I'm grateful that they're, you know, I've got a couple less years on Lizelle in age. So I'm grateful that they're investing in me as the younger player. And Lizelle's amazing. She is such a great human. I've really loved having her around, but it's also just been so great. I was the only keeper initially before the Hurricanes season started, and it's just been great to bounce things off her, and she is just someone that knows keeping. So yeah, I'm not naive. I know that she's one of the best T20 batters in the world, and she's got incredible hands. So I'm really going to have to just keep hustling away at club cricket in the T20s, probably more so with my batting than my keeping. But yeah, I mean, I'm just, whether it's me waiting my turn and just hustling away in the background on my batting, or if it comes to it that an opportunity to keep for another big bash team comes my way, it's definitely going to have to be something I consider heavily. But yeah, we'll wait and see. I guess Lizelle's moved to Tasmania now, so it's something that I'm going to have to consider. But I'm grateful that in a Tigers space, they've put their faith in me to do the job, and Lizelle can have a run around in the field like I did last year. So,
yeah, no, definitely. And obviously, you know, speaking about wicketkeeping still, and you've mentioned Lizelle, is there kind of anyone that you, as a wicketkeeper, you've looked up to, and you've kind of gone, right, like I want to keep like that? Is it Lizelle? Is there other cricketers that you've kind of looked at and gone, you know, I want to do what you do, and I want to play and wicketkeep like you do?
I can definitely say it's not Lizelle, because I think her style is her own. It's very, she's just got an incredible hands and hand-eye coordination. So I think I need to have a little bit more in my setup and process than Lizelle does. She doesn't even wear a helmet when we train. So that's one point of difference that we have. But I've always loved watching Tim Payne keep. I just think he's so clean behind the stumps, and he turns some really tough catches into ones that look so simple for him. And he was also coached by Tim Coyle, who was the guy that I went home and worked with when I lost my contract. I had done some work with Tim when I was growing up, when I first started keeping. So he was, I guess, the coach that my initial technique was based off. So he's someone that I really trust. And I've been lucky enough to have a couple of conversations with Payne as well, and just bounce ideas off him this last year. So that's been really great. But I guess I've kind of come to the point where, you know, I don't necessarily, you know, want to keep like them. I don't want to keep like them. Like, I want to keep like me. And that might look different to some people. But at the end of the day, if it isn't as effective, then I'm going to keep doing it. And if it feels good for me, then that's how I'm going to do it. You know, I'm not tall, I'm not lanky. So looking at some English keepers, it's like, well, that's not going to work for me. I'll give it a try. I'll look silly trying to do it. But yeah, I like to think that I have a bit of a hybrid now between kind of English Australian, or like this keeper that I loved growing up, or this keeper. And yeah, what I've got at the minute, I think, is working, and I can build off.
Great way to look at it, definitely. You obviously, you know, still very young in terms of, you know, your career and the cricket you've played. You have obviously been through quite a bit, but looking forward, do you have any specific goals that you've maybe, you know, set your mind to, or are you more of a player that just focuses on the present?
I think I like to have, you know, little goals in the back of my mind, but they're definitely not, I guess, something that I'm putting on a pedestal. I like to be in the moment and try not to think too far ahead, because when I do, I probably go to water quite quickly. And so I think for me, it's, you know, at this present time, it's making runs and keeping well for Tasmania, and winning games for my team and contributing, and anything that comes out of that at the minute is a bonus. But I know that for me, if I want to go to the next level, I need to you know, work on the small things, so being consistent. And I guess for me, this season was showing that I can keep. I didn't keep last year, but I felt like I actually kind of made myself believe, and hopefully some other people, that I could be a batter at this level. And then I guess coming to this season, it was, okay, well, now I've got to show that I can also keep and yeah, I guess throw my hat in the ring for potential higher honours one day. I think there's a few young keepers at the minute that are all kind of, you know, similar ages, and it feels like a bit of an even playing field, and it's anyone's game at this stage. So it's a nice feeling to have. I've always kind of felt behind the rest of the country, but yeah, it's anyone's game now. So just got to head down, bum up, and hopefully put my best foot forward.
Yeah, and I mean, that comes from, you know, performing well in WNCL and things like that, doesn't it? So it's those little goals which really will contribute to, I guess, your future as a cricketer. So that must be, you know, pretty like exciting, also probably a bit nerve-wracking, because, you know, you're in that position where you've got to perform, but is also, yeah, probably quite a nice feeling that one thing can lead to another pretty easily.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I play my best cricket when I I'm in the moment and I'm you know, just relaxed. Otherwise, you know, you kind of go into your shell, and I've had that, I guess that's a work on for me to try and be express myself a little bit more and train, play the way that I train and the way that I know I can bat. So I don't want to put any more pressure on myself, thinking about, you know, what if this, what if that. If I fail in one game, then I'll never play for Australia or I'll never make it any higher. But yeah, just trying to be in the moment.
Yeah, no, definitely. And then I guess moving on slightly as well, now, do you have a favourite cricket memory? I know there's obviously one that's probably quite significant. If it was that, if not, is there anything else that, you know, you remember fondly as a favourite cricket memory of yours?
Obviously, the most recent one would be the final. The only thing I would change from the final is to have my brothers there to watch. They were both not there, what they're watching on the live stream, but that would be the only thing I change about that one. And that's definitely the highlight of my career so far. But I think when I played underage, our first ever win for Tasmania in underage was quite special as well. Not even a final, it's just first ever win in general. That was an incredible feeling. And I've got some really fond memories from Impaja Cup, the two that I did get to play. That kind of stuff about remembering why you play. I remember a couple of South Australia, it was their first year in the tournament, and a few girls that it was their first couple of games and they got a wicket. I think it might have been our number 10 batter or something, but like they just absolutely loved it. I look back on that and I just smile, and it just makes me remember those good times. And yeah, that was incredible. But I've got so many going to England and playing in England. I got Diamond Duck on Trent Bridge, but you know, I'll never forget that.
There you go. Put the positive spin on it, I guess.
It's a beautiful ground. It looks really great from the change room.
It's a good position to be when you've got a lot of cricket memories rather than none at all, isn't it? It must feel pretty good having a lot to look back on and try to pick between about, you know, four or five and not having any at all. It must be a good feeling.
Absolutely. And even the memories you make off the ground that you'll never forget ever. Going back to the final, like our team, we got to go out into the middle of Blunston and have the lights on at 12 o'clock at night and just enjoy each other's company. You know, the people that you work all year, blood, sweat and tears with, you know, the people that become your family. Like, I'll never forget some of those moments too. So it's not just on field stuff, it's off field, and it's the friendships that'll last a lifetime.
Yeah, that's absolutely awesome. Now, just to move on, we've got a few like quick fire questions that we like to end each interview with. So some cricket related, some aren't. So if you're all good, we'll just run through those if that's all right. And we'll start with red ball or white ball cricket.
The females don't play any red ball, so I'm gonna have to say white.
Yeah, it's an interesting one when you ask that, because obviously there's not enough, for mine at least, red ball cricket in the female game. Obviously, we want to see much more of it. But, you know, what about to watch? Because I think it's a bit of an easy one to ask. Because obviously, again, like, we'd love to see more red ball cricket in the female game. But what about, you know, to sit back and watch?
I still think I'd have to say white ball. I don't know if I'd necessarily say T20. I'd say one dayers. But the, you know, the longer format is definitely not lost on me. I do love sitting down and mindlessly watching the test match in the background, or going, like coming to Blunston and just watching the Shield while doing something else. So, yeah, I appreciate both, but I think I'd still love watching white ball cricket.
Yeah, awesome. All right, so hopefully this doesn't happen, but let's say hypothetically you're stuck on a desert island. What teammate and which two things would you want with you?
We've actually had this question for our Hurricanes content day, and my best friend and housemate, she said that I'd be stuck with her because we do everything together. So she's probably there. And what two things? water because we're probably there for a while, and food because neither of us can go a couple of hours without food.
Yeah, I love how you've had to logically think about that, and you've had that question before.
Yeah, and I didn't get a choice as to who I had with me because I was already stuck with her because she got us on the island in the first place.
And just to clarify, is that, would that be Maisie? Would she be? Is that,
yes.
Yes. Okay, good.
Maisie Gibson.
Let's say you're playing for Tasmania, you're in another WNCL final against South Australia, because why not? Would you rather win it with three sixes or the hat-trick of stumpings?
Oh, I think I've had my turn batting, so I think hat-trick of stumpings, because also I hope that means that someone in my team has got a hat-trick to win the final. So I just think to have all of us out on the field, I think that energy and that feeling would be amazing. So, yeah, I don't think I'd even be concerned with the stumpings. I'd run to the bowler to embrace them.
Yeah, it must be immense to say, yeah, I've had my fun with the bat. Let's just start by the stumps. I've had my 100. I don't need to make any more runs. Let's just get the stump hits instead. All right, a few non-cricket-related ones. Favourite shapes flavour?
Oh, I don't mind the cheese and bacon.
Not too
I feel
bad.
Like it's a bit rogue, but I like yeah. cheese and bacon.
That goes all right. Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
I've got a tattoo of a pineapple, so I'm all for that.
Love it.
What a call. Tattoo of pineapple.
Like it's made to hear that question.
You say cheese and bacon's rogue. Absolutely love that.
It was my first ever tattoo, and I just saw this quote about pineapples, and it's a bit quirky, but I love it.
Brilliant. Okay. Orange juice or apple juice?
I'm going to have to say apple.
Favourite cuisine?
Mexican.
Nice. We'll go beach or backyard cricket?
Well, my current backyard doesn't necessarily facilitate backyard cricket, so I'd have to go with beach. I think there's something about diving for a catch into the water too that's a bit nicer.
Good feeling when you take it as well.
Yeah.
All right, so let's say you're on a game show and you've got to phone a teammate to win $1 million, help you answer a question or whatever. Which teammate are you phoning and why?
I am phoning, this is a tough one between two. I think I'm phoning Emma Flint. I was tossing up between Rachel Trenerman and Tomo, but Tomo's got a couple of years on Treno, so I think that's probably a little bit more why I'm leaning towards her. She's just a wealth of knowledge. She's a physio outside of cricket, and I just feel like anything I want to know, Tomo knows it. So I'm ringing Tomo.
Yeah, nice one. And to go with the final question on the quickfire, the most rogue question we've got, how's that legendary question? We ask it to everybody. Is porridge a cereal?
Is porridge a cereal? Yes.
Okay, interesting. But yeah, no, that's all the questions we have for today. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been incredible to hear, you know, your story and to be able to share your story as well. So yeah, thank you so much. Good luck with all the rest of the WNCL. We'll obviously be watching and cheering you and Tasmania on.
No worries. Thank you guys for having me. It's been a blast.
And she knocks it in front of square leg, and there's a century for the hometown girl. 100 not out. Well batted. Emma Mannix-Jeeves.
So that was Emma Mannix-Jeeves of the Hobart Hurricanes and Tasmanian Tigers. And like we said at the beginning, just a brilliant interview. And yeah, I think like her mindset and the way she goes about her cricket, I think is really wonderful to hear about. And you know, hopefully she can inspire many other young cricketers to go about it the same way that she did. And you know, how she kind of like improved her cricket by her mindset, I think was something really important. And hopefully a lot of people can take something out of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, as we said, her being a First Nations woman will also help with that as well, because we'll see a lot of First Nations cricketers, hopefully, off the back of her, and there's so many others as well, with the likes of Ash Gardner and Scott Boland in the men's game as well. There's plenty of others. But it's great to see how, you know, they're so open about talking about that side of their life and that culture, and hopefully that can inspire loads of other cricketers from the First Nations communities, wherever they may be across the country, to, you know, want to play cricket and live out their dreams.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing so many more players as well, like so many more younger players, like you mentioned, like Emma and Hannah Darlington and, you know, all these younger players, Annika Learoyd, who are all kind of, yeah, being, like you said, open about their culture and their experiences. And it really is, I think, opening arms to younger First Nations people and going, right, you know, if I can do it, you can do it. And there is a place for you. So I think, yeah, that's something that's, yeah, super important and exciting to see what can happen within cricket, you know, surrounding that in the future. But that is all for this week. Now, next week, we'll be back with Elise Villani, like we've mentioned multiple times. Elise Villani, wonderful guest and super excited for you all to hear her story. In the meantime, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter or TikTok at howsthattcp. You can send us an email at howsthatthecricketpodcast@gmail.com, or you can leave us a rating on Spotify as well, which would be greatly appreciated. But that is all from me this week. Thank you for listening.
Likewise. See you later, everyone.